Views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to our show, North State Now. This is Linda Bott. How are everybody tonight? We're live here in, it is April 3rd. So, of course, if it's the first Thursday of the month, yours truly hosts a show. And sometimes I'll have on chefs. Sometimes I'll have on musicians and business owners. But tonight, I have the great pleasure of something that I want to share with you that gives me such enjoyment. And that has to be this book club that I was asked to join. And it's called, evidently tonight, timed it live. It's called West Side Book Club or something like that. But it's been giving me great pleasure and having me read books that I wouldn't choose otherwise. So I want to go around the room. I want you to know who's in the book club. And we are missing three tonight. But let's start off with the person who picked the book this month. And let's go to Maureen. Hi.
Hey, how you doing? Maureen Lensink here.
All right, Maureen.
And are we just going to go around and introduce, or do you want me to start in?
Well, why don't we introduce each person so we know as we're talking who the cast of characters are tonight. And next we have...
Hi, I'm Mara Covington, and I love this book club.
All right.
Yes.
And I'm Sandra Dotsenrod, and I love the book club, and really enjoyed this book.
And I'm Lauren Strickland, or Dr. Lauren Strickland, and I love this book, but also I love these ladies.
Yeah.
And I'm Anique Dumb, and I thoroughly love the book club and the women in it. Great group of smart, intelligent, articulate women.
Yeah, okay, so this is what we read great books, and a lot of the themes so far since I've been in the book have been about women. And they're throughout different centuries, throughout different places on the planet. And I'm just telling you that, you know, I always leave with something I feel that's very thought-provoking and mind-expanding. And that's anytime I feel like that, I feel like it's good juju, good medicine. So, Maureen, you picked this book, The Nature of Fragile Things by Susan, is it Messner.
Messner?
All right. So, why did you pick this book, and why don't you go ahead and lead from here?
Okay. Well, I picked this book because, one, I love historical fiction. So I was looking for something that had some history in it, and again, our theme seems to be strong women, so it seemed like this was going to be that kind of book, and I'm glad to say that when I read it, I was like, whoosh! I do like this book. I was a little, you know, you're always a little worried when you pick a book if you haven't read it first. But I really thoroughly enjoyed this book. So I'm going to start us off with a couple questions to get the conversation rolling. One thing that the author did in this book was she interspersed an investigator report between chapters, which I found to be pretty intriguing, and it kind of kept me going. And I'm wondering how everybody felt about the way the Susan wrote the book and how she was interspersing this kind of interrogation. It would be from like just notes. No people, just what the notes would be reading, what you would be reading on notes from an interrogation. So what did you guys think of that style?
I was hoping that she would be okay with that, because the main character is questioned about something that she did in the story, and so it was interrogation. Where were you? What date were you doing? And checking her story out. So I was really happy with the way it ended, but we'll get to that later.
Right.
But I liked the way it went back and forth, because we were on pins and needles wondering, is she going to get caught doing this or not?
Yes, I thought she was going to get in trouble at first when they were interrogating her. I was thinking to myself, oh, is she in trouble? She shouldn't be in trouble. She's such a great human being.
Right. Yeah. Anybody else have thoughts on that?
Yeah, it gave little glimpses of what was to come. So it kept you curious, like what's next.
Pins and needles.
Yes.
How about the story of a 1906, this is set in 1906, San Francisco, and the earthquake occurs during that time. And then we get some glimpses into what it would have been like to have survived an earthquake or not survived, and the fires that ensued afterwards and what happened to the people. How did you feel about that? Did you gain some understanding of what it might have been like during that time?
I thought, for me personally, I thought that that was the most outstanding part of the book. And it made me want to go back and find more historical accounts of that time, because it went on for days.
Yes.
And misplaced, I mean, in entire populations were, you know, and then of course, it didn't matter what your social background was, you still were without a home, had been, you know, rubble around you, and the fires, we know about the fires, it was more so damaging San Francisco than the quakes itself.
Exactly.
I thought it was interesting, one section in the book had mentioned during the fire, they're in San Francisco, and they're surrounded by water, but they couldn't get the fires out. You know, it was just such a hardship for them at that time because they didn't have all the amenities that we have today. So that was interesting.
Yeah, I agree with you. I was born and raised in the Bay Area, and just to know that it was a huge devastation with the fires, and I was in college at Berkeley when we had the big earthquake, you know, and the bridge collapsed and all that, and I remember some of my friends, their parents couldn't get home until the next day, you know, and so it just kind of made me think about that, and I was like, wow, this was pretty devastating.
Mm-hmm. And in that particular time, that what they would do is have a big billboard, and somebody, like, don't you say she ripped off a piece of paper that would have been out of her father's notebook of words, and so that's what she said, please stay here, here's where I am, or I'm okay, and then when she went back the next day to this big billboard, that piece of paper had been removed, so you really were at the mercy of others that were going to keep your space.
Yes. They were searching for survivors, so the Red Cross was able to coordinate who was missing and try and reconnect the families together. So that was the old-fashioned way to do it, because now I'm sure with social media we can figure out who's where. But anyway, it was thousands upon thousands of people that were displaced, and they had to walk, and one of the characters is pregnant, delivering a baby, and walking to the Red Cross just so she can find her friends again. It was a very scary time.
I'm wondering if anybody, like, just because we've had the fires here in Redding, you know, were you able to kind of take from our experiences here and just maybe place yourself in that time? You know, was there anybody kind of felt like, oh, I have a glimmer of what that would have been like?
A very small glimmer, because we still had so many homes that survived.
Oh, yeah,
but,
definitely.
I mean, neighborhoods were destroyed by the earthquake and then the fires.
Right.
So it was mass destruction. Whereas here, it was 1,000 or 2,000 mm-hmm. homes, and, you know, it was devastating. But nonetheless, this was a much bigger scale.
Oh, yeah,
I think.
Definitely.
I was utterly fascinated because, obviously, I knew about the earthquakes. I knew about the fires, but I had no idea how massive it was, you know, when they said 200,000 people were displaced, 5.5 square miles, you
know,
500
people.
Blocks. Mm-hmm. I mean, those really made it so impactful for me and made it visually, I could picture it in my mind, all these people walking dazed and confused. And then even
dazed.
The poor horses, you know, that really resonated with me.
Yes.
when they were reflecting on the horses being so skinny from working overtime, pulling all that rubble out.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, we had an interesting cast of characters. We had three women that ended up being bonded over the situation. We had the main character of a man who seemed to somehow dupe these women. Mm-hmm. And so that was really interesting.
Dupe.
Yeah. I don't know how else can we explain that, right? But let's go back to the beginning where Sophie's in New York. She's an immigrant from Ireland, and she's in New York, and she answers an ad to marry this man, Martin, in San Francisco. So she comes all the way to San Francisco, marries a man she doesn't know, and is going to become a mother to his 5-year-old daughter, Kat.
So from there, she tells him, I'm not ready for relations. I would like to take it easy, because she really doesn't know him. She's quite a bit younger than he is, and he's far more sophisticated. And he said he wanted her to help take care of his daughter. She had no idea how wealthy he was, but he was wealthy because he owned like a brownstone in San Francisco. And so he was very cold. He did not want something from her because she tried to have relations with him, and it was very perfunctory. So that was an odd part of that. But she fell in love with the daughter, and she was very caring to his five-year-old daughter.
Right.
And then I'll let someone pick up it, what happened after that, because that was quite a bit.
Well, what do you think about her making that choice, though? Was that a good choice?
She had no choice. The poor thing immigrated from Ireland because she had another situation that she was running from.
Yeah.
And, you know, she came from Ireland. She thought she'd get a job. She was working in some horrible factory. She had poor living arrangements. This was her way out. I mean, she was basically a mail order bride. She thought she was going to be entering a relationship where she could fall in love and help with the baby, the child. And indeed, he was just utilizing her for a whole other purpose. And I don't know what that was. Oh, it was to cover his lifestyle.
Because
he claimed to be an insurance salesman. Right. And so he needed the picture
needed
of a wife
good.
And child and, you know, a nanny for the kid, although he could have cared less about that child. The fact that he still had the child was amazing because I was surprised that he didn't turn over that five-year-old to the grandparents.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we know later in the story why he didn't.
Right.
So we get to that later. But
I thought she was very progressive for her time.
That's a great way of
putting
it.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Well, back in 1906.
She had a lot of secrets, and she was running from her secrets, and he had a lot of secrets. So they actually, the one was an antagonist and one's more the heroine. They both had a lot of background in common that we later find out about, which is what keeps you reading and turning the page.
Page turner.
Well, let's take a break on that note. We are here with the West Side Book Club. This is Linda Bott. I've got a great group of gals with me. The book that we've been reading is, again, called The Nature of Fragile Things. And I'm going to encourage, if you are not involved with the book club and you've been thinking about it, I'm one that doesn't really like to join, but this has been a great, what do I want to say? It's been a wonderful experience, and it's helped me to grow. And I love our conversations, like you said, Lauren, a great group of women with varied backgrounds, and we come together and we bring food and we talk and we discuss, and it's
great
just
time.
Wonderful. So anyway, coming back, we're going to talk more about this book with the West Side Book Club, and let's take a break. We'll be right back.
Invest in your future today with a degree or certificate from Shasta College. Get job ready fast with one of our high-demand career technical programs like nursing, heavy equipment, and welding. Or work on transferring to a CSU or UC with guarantee placement. Full-time students get 2 years tuition-free. Summer session begins June 9th. Click or call 242-7650. Your success starts at Shasta College.
If you're tired of artificial intelligence and dishonest news, tune in to Poke the Hornet's Nest every other Sunday at 8 a.m.
Join Nick Gardner and Doug Janke, two hosts who were educated at the School of Hard Knocks. Get a layman's view of local government as well as our take on national and world events.
If you're woke, go back to bed. You won't like us.
This show's for educated voters, not for people that voted for Kamala Harris.
Tune in to Poke the Hornet's Nest every other Sunday, 8 a.m. here on KCNR1460.com, 96.5 FM, and 1460 AM.
Looking for work? O2 Employment Services has been working with local job seekers for the past 20 years. If you're tired of uploading your resume and getting no response, it's time to let O2 help you find that perfect position. Oh, and by the way, you pay absolutely nothing for our service. If you'd like our help, head on over to our website at o2es.com, click apply now, and complete our online application. We have connections with over 600 local businesses. Once we have your information and understand what you're looking for, for? We can introduce you to all the positions you may wish to consider. We currently have over 100 available positions, and we would love to match you with the one you're looking for. O2 Employment Services, the North State's leading staffing agency. Give us a call at 530-223-4674. That's 530-223-4674. Or visit us online at o2es.com.
The Ramsey Show.
You actually can help people, and you don't help them by giving them a government program. You help them by showing them the way out. People love me enough to put their arm around me and show me a different way. I didn't figure it all out in my own head. So there's a power to hope, but that's not some kind of false panacea positive thinking way. It works. You can't positive think your way into everything, but you can't negative think your way into anything.
Listen weekdays at noon on KCNR, 96.5 FM and 1460 AM, your talk radio station.
Welcome back. We're here on KCNR, 96.5 FM, 1460 AM. This is Linda Bott, and you are listening to North State Now here. We are live on this 3rd of April. I'm very excited to be here tonight. And you just never know, what moves you or what moves me in order to host, a topic. And tonight I couldn't pass up having, the girls from the book club. And we named it tonight the West Side Book Club, which is really, really great. So, everybody, there's six of us here. There are really 9 to 10 that come on a regular basis, and each girl, or lady or individual, whatever, however you want to call yourself, I'll say, moi, whoever, however you want to call yourself, picks a book out, and then we read it, then we get together, and that's usually how it works, is we talk about it, and we discuss the characters and what it meant to us, and I think it's interesting because all of us have varied backgrounds, and so how we read is really the lens of how we see, or how we perceive the world. So it's fascinating to see how each person comes together and talks about how they feel about this book. So Maureen, you chose The Nature of Fragile Things by Susan, is it Messner?
Yes.
Okay, and so we started off by talking about the earthquake. That was a big takeaway of this book, set in the time of right before the San Francisco earthquake in 1906.
Yes, and I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to back up a little bit, and I'm just going to read an excerpt from the back of the book to kind of bring everybody in so you can just have a little idea. If you were at the bookstore perusing books, this is what you would find, and maybe this would intrigue you. Sophie Whalen is a young Irish immigrant so desperate to get out of a New York tenement that she answers a mail order bride ad and agrees to marry a man she knows nothing about. San Francisco widower Martin Honke provides to be as aloof as he is mesmerizingly handsome. Sophie quickly develops quick affection for Kat, Martin's silent 5-year-old daughter, but Martin's odd behavior leaves her with the uneasy feeling that something about her newfound situation isn't right. Then one spring evening, a stranger at the door sets in motion a transforming chain of events. Sophie discovers hidden ties to two other women. The first, pretty and pregnant, is standing on her doorstep. The next is hundreds of miles away in the American Southwest, grieving the loss of everything she once loved. The fate of these three women intertwine on the eve of the devastating earthquake, thrusting them into a perilous journey that will test their resiliency, resolve, and ultimately their belief that love can overcome fear. So that is a little bit of a summary of that. So going back to the questions, here's the next question. A major theme in this story is the power of female solidarity. Sophie develops great affection for Belinda and Candace. Candace is Kat. Mother and used to be married to Martin, who whatever his name was then, right? And despite unfortunate circumstances, that brings them together. And so how do you think these female friendships determine what's happening and looking at it in kind of our circumstance now, as opposed to their circumstance and history?
Well, I think women will always stand together, so that has not changed. So she was bonded with Belinda, the pregnant woman at her doorstep, when she came and they discovered they were both in love with the same man. That was really shocking to the both of them, especially Belinda, the pregnant one, because already Sophie suspected that Martin was a bad person and his inability to connect at an intimate level. So already she was aware of that, but Belinda had no idea. She was a darling, sweet lady, pregnant and vulnerable. So they immediately figured out what was going on, and this prompted Sophie to go snooping around in his desk drawer, where she discovers that his ex-wife Candace, the mother of the child Cat, was actually still alive. She had what was called, what was that?
Tuberculosis.
Yeah, it was tuberculosis. They had a different name for it, but it was TB.
Consumption.
Yes. What's it called? Consumption. I had never heard that term. So anyway, so she discovered that Candace was indeed alive, and it was a real moral dilemma for her, because she was in love with Kat and she wanted to keep her, but she did the right thing. She knew that after all this was done, and she knew that she was going to take the child back to her mother. And then the nice twist is the mother gives the child back to Sophie. So really, that was a really nice turn of events, because women, she was a very selfless woman, because she knew she was dying. She knew that Kat had someone that was going to take her under her wings and really take good care of her. So that was really lovely. And I'll let someone else pick up where once the girls get bonded, the earthquake happens, Martin is killed.
But what before you do that, what about Belinda? Talk about Belinda and how
Belinda's a pregnant lady.
Yeah, she discovers that Martin is her husband also.
With a different name.
How that feels for her, because she is,
Yeah, I think initially Belinda and Candace were a little suspicious of the other woman until the story really came out. So, you know, she's pregnant. She sees the picture, their wedding picture on the mantle.
Right.
And he has two different names. So she had to really figure out that, she had to really figure out, is there love here or what? So when she finds out that he didn't love her, he just married her for whatever reason, she's kind of relieved, actually. She's pregnant with his baby, but she's kind of relieved, like, okay, he didn't love her.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure he loved me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he married Belinda because he had scoped her out, and he was super shady, and she had inherited a B&B and a gold mine from her father. And so while he was having two lives, going back and forth, saying he was an insurance salesman or a land surveyor to Belinda, he would be at one house and the other. And when he was at Belinda's place in San Rafael, he was in the gold mine hiring people to dig up these gold nuggets and then hiding them at Sophie's place. So there is a lot of sketchiness happening, and Belinda happened to find some correspondence in his pocket, and she just showed up unbeknownst to Sophie with, you know, trying to figure out who this guy was, and was utterly shocked, and then was not due for another month, but because of the earthquake happening, went into early labor.
Yeah, that was awful. Going through your water breaking at the top of the stairs, and an earthquake is happening, and you find out your husband is married to another woman, and there's a child, another child involved, not hers, and she was just, they were all just kind of going, what is going on here? And then Martin was at the house, and an accident happened, and it was just crazy. Somebody pushed him down the stairs, and Sophie looked down and saw his leg and said, whoa, that does not look right. It is crooked. There's something wrong with him. There's no way he could get up and walk out of this house with that leg like that. So they kind of like, okay, we have to have a plan of attack. We got to leave. We got to get out of here. And then they left.
During the earthquake.
With the water broken.
So was the gold discovered because there was some form of how he was getting the nuggets and hiding them in bottles?
Of vinegar.
In the basement. And I've never heard of that before. He was putting them in something. So
he was saying it was hair tonic.
Hair tonic.
Yeah, hair
and
tonic.
That, but the Belinda, so we were led to believe that one of his cousin was formulated this hair tonic, and that's where he was spending his time.
Yes.
So we thought Belinda at first was the cousin. But so when you were talking about how Sophie was progressive, do you mean that here's this pregnant woman that shows up on their door, on her door. She's pregnant. Belinda sees the photograph, and she, like, almost faints because that's her husband in the photograph with Sophie. Is that what you mean by in that instant, or who knows if it was an hour, 3 hours, half a day? We don't really know how long that time was, that she actually embraced her and brought her in her time of need.
Yes, absolutely. Sophie was just a really neat woman, I felt like. She just had it, something in her spirit that just made her so helpful to other people. And I thought she was very progressive because, A, she answered a mail order marriage and moved from New York to San Francisco. And then, B, because she found a way to connect all the women that this Martin fellow was gathering, keeping out in the outskirts
and
of their relationship.
Speaking of Martin, I want to know, what do you guys think? How did he do this? Like, does anybody know someone who's been totally messed up?
Bamboozled?
Yeah.
All right. So on that note, let's stay with us because we're going to ask, have you ever been bamboozled? Do you know of anybody who's been bamboozled? I got some stories, but I don't want to take all night. So let's get back to the book. But we'll be back right after these messages.
This Hawaiian mini vacation is brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. So what does professional office cleaning have to do with relaxing in a tropical paradise? Frankly, nothing. But Maui Bob and the crew want to remind you to be sure to take the time for what's important in this workaday world. Family, friends, and yes, even yourself. And if their professional office cleaning services can help you make that time, give them a call at 221-5868. This Hawaiian mini vacation was brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, 221-5868.
Now is a great time to prepare for the upcoming wildfire season. REU and city staff are busy clearing vegetation to mitigate wildfire risk to our power lines, facilities, and the community. You can also prepare by trimming back shrubs and tree branches that are closer than 5 feet from your home. Clear debris from your roof and gutter and clear dead vegetation on your property. For information about tree trimming and proximity to power lines, call 530-224-4356. Please remember, we all need to work together to prevent wildfires in our community.
Hi, this is Chuck Kenny, owner of Shasta Gas Propane. 27 years ago, my wife Judy and I started Shasta Gas with the help and under the direction of the Lord Jesus Christ. In fact, we believe He is the owner and we are simply the managers. Through the years, we have received many offers from major national corporations to buy Shasta Gas. But our commitment has always been to be and remain locally owned and family operated. Our daughter Karen Wehunt and her husband Jason now manage the daily operations of Shasta Gas and Shasta Tanks, a new business we started a few years ago. We now have the third generation of family members working in the business. Sunshine Stevens, our granddaughter, and her husband Adam, and our grandson Jason. Our commitment and motto are still the same. Our customers are warm friends. To support locally owned family operated business, please call Shasta Gas Propane at 530-365-3793. That's 530-365-3793.
This is Ted Leidy with Northern Firearms Instruction. Obtaining a California concealed weapons license will allow the licensed individual to transport a listed handgun in their vehicle or on their person in public. For application instructions, training, and other information, contact NFI at 530-999-1822 or visit us online at usgunpro.com. This is Ted Leidy, and remember, it's our right and our responsibility.
We are here live on KCNR. It is Thursday, the first Thursday of the month in April, the 3rd. Linda Bott, and this is North State Now. So happy you're joining us tonight. I hope you saw our little live Facebook feed on KCNR. This is the first time I'm doing this because I'm really passionate about it, and I think that I encourage anyone who's listening that if you can be a part of a book club, you can actually go to Barnes & Noble and join book clubs as well. So I have been was invited, and just one of the best things I've done in a long time. The book that we've been reading and talking about tonight is called The Nature of Fragile Things. So the Westside Book Club here, there are six ladies that are here with me tonight, and usually we've got 9 or 10. A couple couldn't make it. But we're also celebrating Anique's birthday.
Yeah,
woo!
Happy birthday, Anique!
Yeah, and Anique, you know, you seem to always be the ringleader. You always seem to get everybody together, and
it's
commonality, you bring us all together, and it's great stuff. So this is actually Maureen Lensick's choice this of the book this month, and we all have been talking about how much we really enjoyed the read.
Oh, I'm so glad. You never know, right?
Let me interrupt.
Okay.
The nice thing about this book club is even when the book is not good, we still manage to have very interesting conversations. And it brings us together because we had a book that Betsy had picked, and it was not a good book, but it was really insightful to see the different opinions on abortion and religion. So the books don't even need to be good, but it expands our mind and it opens our horizons to the way the other people think.
Well said.
Absolutely.
Well, I think we ended with talking about Martin, and how did Martin manage to dupe not only these women that we've already brought up, but also previous women. There were several.
He was very good looking, and that counts for a lot. Women are swayed by those very handsome, suave men.
He had those eyes.
Yeah. I don't know.
With money.
Well, he seemed to have money, but he didn't always actually have money. But
M.O. was taking advantage
of women,
killing, getting rid of, and taking the inheritance money, right?
Yes.
That's kind of the theme of this book, but we don't really know that to the end.
Exactly. But it is interesting to think, and I think in our world today, we could probably meet people who have had those things happen to them, or just in our own lives, maybe not to this degree, but you find yourself believing somebody who is totally not truthful. And I think because most people want to believe that people are truthful. And, you know, so anyway, I just thought that was interesting. Does anybody have any insights on that?
Well, it's still happening all the time. When you watch the news, and they're always warning you about these romance scams, you know, especially with older people, that people will reach out to you. And I think it's even easier now with the Internet to have a romantic scam happening.
Yeah. I think as human nature, people just want to be loved, and sometimes so badly that you're going to, you know, you find yourself going somewhere that maybe you shouldn't. Anyway, okay. Did you want to say something, Anique? Okay.
All right, so we're going down questions like we would if we were at somebody's house right now and talking about this this wonderful book called, again,
The Nature of Fragile Things. So we did talk about how Belinda and Sophie get together. Kat is there, the 5-year-old daughter. They're up on the stairs. Martin shows up. And then there's this accident. And then there's the issue about how did this accident happen? And it does come out that Kat, the 5-year-old, pushes Martin down the stairs. And we are wondering, like, why would Kat do that? And because perhaps he's going after Belinda, the pregnant, which
is her sister.
Right. Carrying her
after her. Yes. So the child said, I'm pushing him out of the way. He goes tumbling down the staircase, and these women are like, we got to go. We got to take what we have. And Sophie was smart enough to take the documents from the office that clearly identify him as a criminal and a grifter and a thief of all wealthy women. So they had to get going. So the question that Maureen is going to ask us is,
I don't know, Anique. What
have we ever had something like that happen to? Is that what you were going with?
No. I was going to ask, is it really killing him if you leave?
Yeah.
He was alive when they left.
Right. So they leave the situation, and they're thinking he might be dead because his legs are not in a natural position, right?
Yes.
But they decide to leave. And so we don't really know if he's alive or is he dead. Now, will he live or will he die? So this is a question for the book club. You know, so if you leave somebody who you know is, you don't know if they're dead, you don't know if they're, you know, what the status is, and you leave and they die, is that killing them or not?
No. I think it's okay.
Depends on the person.
Yes.
True.
Well, in that moment in the book, they are, you know, it's not clear to the reader who did the pushing.
Right. Mm-hmm.
The three of them that were in the top, the earthquake was happening.
Right.
Plaster was coming off the wall. Yes. Wood beams were falling around them. How can you make sure who, with the 2 or 3 inch shove, push, whatever, it was this cluster of movements. And I think at that point, it was, she grabbed Kat, she came, took Belinda, Belinda was almost dropping her water or whatever you want to call it. And there, whatever. Water. And breaking. Yeah, well, it's dropping too. But anyway, so not to drop the baby. In the middle of all this chaos, I think it's called survival.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think I agree with that mm-hmm. too. But we also find out later in the book that the reason that Sophie has left Ireland is because she was previously married and she had an abusive husband who beat her. And also beat her while she was pregnant, caused her to lose the baby. Now she could not bear children anymore. And she and her mother made a decision for her to leave Ireland and take on her deceased sister's identity. And when the reason that she left was because her husband, she went to bring him some food or something down at the docks where he worked, and he was being abusive to her, so she took a pan and she hit him in the head and he fell in the water. And she chose not to save him.
Right.
So,
deja vu.
So she has two things now.
I think we call that a bad picker.
Yes. But at the end of the book, as she's being interviewed, this is what we, you know, we've got another segment, so we have to kind of, you know, sift through this, is that it, throughout the book, we were talking about as she's been being interviewed, we have no idea how this is going to turn out. Like, is she going to go to jail or whatever? But then we find out towards the, like, three quarters through the book about what happened with the first husband and losing the baby. We don't know that at the beginning.
And we should say that she's being interviewed because Martin is missing.
And this is after I don't know how many weeks, months it would be after the earthquake and everybody was displaced and they're coming back and they're trying to. But all the while, the guy who's interviewing knows the past of Martin.
And of Sophie. He knows her whole story, but she doesn't know that he knows. He's trying to get her to tell the truth, right? Okay, how about this question? In Chapter 25, as Sophie surveys the rubble that was once their San Francisco home, she notes that it is the nature of the earth to shift. It is the nature of fragile things to break. It is the nature of fire to burn. What is she referring to when she says fragile things?
Probably the spirit of people, you know? I mean, we can be really strong, but when there's love involved, you're vulnerable and you're fragile. And even Kat, the 5-year-old, she was nonverbal because of the trauma she had been inflicted upon her. Her father made it seem like she had caused her mom's death, and then she stopped speaking, and it turns out that her mom is alive, and they were reunited, but her mom was deathly ill. So she was another fragile thing in the book, many layers of fragile things, but with strong grit deep within them, survival instinct on all of them.
Because even Kat at that young age seemed to have a survival instinct to take care of this mom who has a baby, you know, who's not given birth and she's pregnant and she has an instinct because that's her half-sister and somehow she gets a real attachment for that. Fairly immediately.
Right.
She did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Even Candace, though, her mother, who was ill, she was fragile, you know, in her moments, but at the same time, she was strong to accept Sophie's request to take her in as she's dying and raise her daughter as opposed to her aunt and uncle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In the book, what we see is how long Sophie stayed with, I can't think what with the mother's name.
Candace.
Yeah, Candace. Stayed with Candace in, was it Arizona, wherever she was?
Right.
Yes. Yeah, so
a month.
She stayed quite some time where at first she would leave the Kat with with her mom, with Candace, and she would leave. And as time went on, I think the mother knew that she was passing away and that she didn't have a long time to live. I thought it was beautiful that they all came out to California together.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And that I think there was such grace in those moments of seeing the reality of what this picture could look like, and that's the ultimate sacrifice and love of a mother. Mm-hmm. Like, what's the best thing for my child?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. 100%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they all live together with the new baby, the mother of the new baby, Belinda, and Candace was generous enough to not want her child to see her die. So she was strong enough to say, I'm going back to Arizona. Mm-hmm. And anyway, it was just beautiful because they created their own family. And even the old boyfriend comes into the picture, and he's had a crush on
Belinda's old boyfriend.
Yes, yeah. So it's all beautiful because, you know, many people don't have family, but they created a beautiful family.
They did.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to take a break on that note. And, you know, take pause for a minute. Like, when you think about your blood family and the people that you choose, your sisters, I feel like, on many levels, that these gals step in. I never had sisters. Step in and give me food for thought, and also are very supportive and loving. And so my question would be at this break, before we, you know, listen to these commercials or think about it, how have you been about that lately in your life? Have you been loving and supportive? And if not, you've been selfish, because we all can be. I mean, we're all humans, right? And think about what it is. When you do a random act of kindness, how powerful that is in the world. And on that note, we're going to take a break. We'll be right back with this book club.
Do you have something you'd like to get painted? Then bring it to Victory Powder Coating. Powder coating is a durable, colorful, environmentally friendly alternative to paint. It's useful in automotive, agricultural, decorative, and high-temperature applications. Victory Powder Coating has become the North State leader in powder coating applications and metal finishing. They specialize in large industrial items like truck beds, agricultural equipment, and trailers. They're dedicated to providing superior work and outstanding customer care. Consider Victory Powder Coating for your next project. Victory Powder Coating.
Experience Glowing Wild, an illuminated wildlife lantern festival at the Sundial Bridge and Turtle Bay Exploration Park in Redding, California. Open select nights April 4th through June 8th, 7 to 10 p.m. Featuring 10 acres of illuminated gardens filled with Asian lanterns inspired by plants and animals from around the world. Plus food, drinks, live performances on select nights, and much more. Don't miss Turtle Bay's Glowing Wild Lantern Festival at the Sundial Bridge. Learn more at turtlebay.org.
I'm celebrating local heroes. Tune in the second Thursday each month at 6:05 p.m. right after the news for Heroes of the North State on North State Now. I'm Michelle Slade. During North State Now, we will speak with your neighbors, friends, family, and community members who give back, not to be recognized, but because it's the right thing to do. During these conversations, we will learn what truly makes our community and the people in it. Join me the second Thursday of each month at 6:05 p.m., right after the news, for Heroes of the North State on North State Now.
For over 50 years, House of Realty has provided experienced and effective advice to its real estate clients. Experts in residential, commercial, and investment property, we have the knowledge and tools to assist you with all of your real estate needs. Family-owned and operated since 1965, we have been an active part of the Shasta County community for generations. Please call House of Realty today at 241-8300, a reputation for excellence since 1965.
You have a choice when it comes to your cancer care, and I want you to know that at Valor Oncology, we are here to provide the best possible care right here in Reading. I'm Dr. Lauren Strickland, Valor's breast oncology surgeon, and I'm proud to serve this community that I call home. When you come to Valor Oncology, you'll see the same dedicated team at every visit, physicians who know your history and are committed to your care. We offer state-of-the-art technology that rivals major cancer centers, combined with the personalized care you deserve. We are not just a team of doctors. We are part of the fabric of this community, and we are here for you today and tomorrow. When it comes to your health, you deserve expert care, compassion, and stability. Ask your doctor to refer you to Valor Oncology, because we're committed to you and we're committed to Reading. Call 530-900-4000 or visit valor.org to schedule a consultation. Valor Oncology, rooted in Reading, focused on you.
No one else can figure what's on your lips. It's just nothing words unspoken.
Welcome back to our show. This is North State Now with Linda Bott, and I'm very thrilled tonight as we're live here on the 3rd of April to be talking about the West Side Book Club. Yes, we're here tonight, and I think we need to make this a regular thing. And we never know, like, you know, maybe I can make this happen the first Thursday of every month as we pick a book out. This one is The Nature of Fragile Things by Susan Messner. A couple gals who are very active on social media, a lot of, already contacted a DM of the author, and she may be calling in. Let's see if we can get her to call in tonight, because we've loved this book, right?
Yes.
And this is Maureen Lensick. She's kind of, Lensick, she's chairing the, evening, and, is letting us all know about this is her choice and why, and has been asking us questions.
Okay, shall we pick it up?
Sure.
All right. So I think we're going to, because of the time allotted here, we're going to have to kind of move a little bit. And I want us to go now to when Sophie is actually in the office of Deputy Logan, and he is now interviewing her face-to-face. And we're reading as they're having this interview, and he knows all about her history, and he actually knows all about Martin, and he thoroughly knows about Martin, and I think that they've been after him for a long time. So when he comes up missing, that's the impetus for them to try to figure out where he is, and, you know, Sophie's story just kind of gets intermingled in the whole thing. So let's talk about how the interview goes with Deputy Logan and Sophie. What do you guys think about that and how it ends?
I was concerned he was interviewing her in order to arrest her for the death of Martin. We weren't clear that he was still, I wasn't clear if he was still alive. So my big concern was he was going to get her arrested for the death of Martin. That was my big fear. But in the end, he actually was on her side. So, and we were hoping they would get together, but that was just wishful thinking.
Do you have something?
I thought it was interesting because he called her a liar and said she's been lying during the interview this whole time. And I was like, why is he calling her a liar? She's telling him the truth about everything, but it was about the namesake. So I thought
right.
That was interesting.
It was about her alias, that yes. She took on her sister's identity,
mm-hmm.
Right?
And that when we start off with his interviews, it's kind of accusing her, like, well, why would you... You know, like, why would you be a mail order and all of those things that made it look like that he was appearing that he was going to make her out to be the bad person in this.
Right.
So it was a nice twist for us in
mm-hmm.
the read.
Yes, yes. And he knew about the death of her first husband. So
yeah.
It's really making you think, oh, no, double murder. Right.
And Sophie actually was lying to him initially during the interviewing, saying she hadn't seen her husband. Mm-hmm. Nothing had happened. They were just escaping. And then once he could show, you know, proof and explain that he knows he showed up there, that's when she kind of came clean and we realized she had all these secrets.
Right. And she didn't really know if he was alive or dead either, because she went back to the property and was looking around where he would have been in the desolation of the home and found what she thought was a bone shard, right?
So and the ashes.
And what did the neighbor do? I can't remember. Libby, that across the street neighbor, came over.
We'll send our guys over to clean up the yard for you. And she's thinking, oh, my gosh, what's going to happen now? Right? Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there's a question. You know, when we were talking about just very thing, in Chapter 32, Deputy Logan releases Sophie and even allows her to keep the records from her sister's death to protect her false identity. He says, I believe in justice, too, but I know that sometimes it's not delivered in the way it should be. Sometimes it's not delivered at all, and the evil man walks free. He says, I believe in justice, but I believe it's best administered by those commissioned by the rest of humanity to give it. Did you find that profound?
Yes. Actually, because he knew all the truth. It really, he had obviously had some kind of trauma in his life and some people probably taken away. They don't really tell us, right? But you get the sense that something happened to him and that somebody was murdered, his family was taken away. So he's kind of understanding her plight, right? And in the end, he does some really amazing things.
He's leaving it up to a higher power. You know, yeah. Whether it's karma or biblical. He's putting it out there.
Right.
So we go back to San Rafael because Candace goes on to pass away. She goes to her family and she dies. She's with Kat. She's raising Kat. And she's living with Belinda. And then your boyfriend is in the picture. So, again, it's a new family. They've created this family in beautiful San Rafael in a gorgeous B&B, probably in winery land. And so that's kind of how it finishes up.
20 years
later. And the baby. And the baby. The new baby is there. And the cat is able to grow up with her half-sister. So it was really beautiful way to tie everything up and then get away with whatever happened because it wasn't their fault.
Right.
It was an accident.
But
the earthquake was occurring, and everything happened so fast, and she may have pushed him, and, you know, they thought they left him for dead. But anyway, that was a nice way to wrap it all up.
But then we have to fast forward to when Kat now, the little girl, is now an older woman, attending a wedding in Wyoming, I think.
Oh, yeah.
And finds out that there's a court case concerning a man who sounds much like her father, right?
Ironic.
Yes. And so they end up, does anybody else want to finish that off? Talk about what happens in the end?
Go for it.
Oh, okay. Well, Kat finds out about this court date. She goes to the courtroom. She sees that it is indeed her dad. And they are charging him with so many things. And he ends up, the justice will be that he will be hanged. So he finally receives his, I don't know, you know, how people feel about someone being hanged, but, you know, he receives justice as it was at that time.
And Logan is there.
I think we find out.
Right, Logan was there.
Right. The cop that interviewed him the whole along, if you're following who Logan is. But in the end, we find out that he's got either 6 or 7 homicides, people that he's killed along the way to inherit money. So, I think all of us could be in agreement that that's not that bad.
And how Kat felt, too, when she watched that happen.
And really, you have to ask yourself, how much is enough? I mean, how many women did he need to kill? And how much money did he need to live off of? I mean,
parents and grandparents.
Yes, I mean, he ruined lives for so many.
Right.
It was a fitting punishment.
Yes. But didn't their eyes meet in the court, and he knew exactly who she was?
Yes,
that was.
I
thought that was like
poetic justice.
Gave me the chills.
Yeah. So we have about two and a half minutes left, and I, you know, do you mind if I ask the last question?
Oh no, please.
Okay, so it says, what do you think in the end, Sophie, Belinda, and Kat had happy lives, and why? And how do you think each one was changed by what they collectively experienced? Let's go around the room.
I think that they collectively had a very happy life and that they were supportive for one another, and they all went through such a traumatic period and they came out in a very happy fashion.
Yeah, I think the bond that they created through this tragedy allowed them to overcome everything and move forward with a happy life. And they all based their decisions on Kat, you know, even trying to make sure that she wasn't going to be taken down for supposedly maybe murdering her dad or however, but I think they all came together to be happy because they came together.
This was a positive of the trauma bonding. You know, you always hear the negative of it, but this was a positive because these women were all selfless and they put the life of a child ahead of them, and because of this tragedy that occurred, they were able to all come together and show their strength and their compassion and their love for this child, and were rewarded with a really great life afterwards.
Mm-hmm. Yes, like the title says, the nature of fragile things, the relationships between all the women and the children, and it coming together to just be such a beautiful story.
Yes, I think it's redemption. Mm-hmm. And that in the end, I think that all humans, we all desire love. And while they maybe didn't get it, you know, in the first round, but they found it in each other, and those love bonds are what actually heal. And I think they healed.
And I think that's the title of the book, The Nature of Fragile Things.
Right.
So put that on your read list, and thank you for joining us tonight. It's been a great honor, and this is Linda Bott. Thanks for joining us on North State Now. You can hear this back down the road on KCNR1460.com. You can go to our archives if you're interested in learning about this book. And, yeah, we'll just see you tomorrow morning here on The Morning Show. Thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you for having
Thank
us.
Thank you for having
Thank
us.
Thank you.
Wait, can we get a picture? Yeah, cool. Can we get a picture of all of us with our headphones?
News from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.